Hey, welcome back to The Last of Us, presented by Pop Culture Leftovers. I'm Brian from Pop Culture Leftovers. I am joined by Joe Stark from Pop Culture Leftovers. Welcome, Joe.
Hey, stoked to be here.
We've also got Melissa Sloter from the Wild Pretty Things podcast. Welcome, Melissa.
Hello, thank you for having me.
And he's back from the Reality Guys on YouTube. Billy, welcome back, man.
Happy to be back. What's going on, guys?
Yeah, man. Jeez, what happened to you last week?
The real world, man. I was working at a meeting that got delayed by an hour, and then that means I'm not catching the right train, and then the clickers get you. So, I mean, I tried, but I'm here. I'm excited, refreshed.
All right. Yeah, we were about ready to replace you with Joe Vitale. I don't know. I don't know if we can trust Billy anymore. No, I'm kidding.
The way she goes.
I'm kidding. No, Joe Vitale from the Vintage Geeks joined us last week. He did a great job.
And, yeah, it was awesome.
Great to have him fill in for you last week, Billy. But it's also great to have you back and talking about the newest episode, episode 6 of The Last of Us, which was directed by, we got a new director on this one. It was Jasmila Zabanznik, and written by Craig Mazin. And this one was titled Kin, which had many meanings throughout this episode. Family was the biggest focus in this one. I felt like you've got Joel being reunited with Tommy. Tommy's got himself a new family starting up. And then there's like the family that I believe is forming between Joel and Ellie. And I think, this was a rough episode for them in a lot of ways, but I loved it. I thought it was fantastic. Joe, what did you think about, episode Ken?
Yeah, this was, I think, what this relationship has been building towards, that this moment of truth where they're just going to have to rip the Band-Aid off, say some hurtful things, and then push through and find the true feelings that are there afterwards. And you get to see this on multiple levels. I mean, poor Joel, he had to go through the damn thing twice with two different people that he really, really cared about. But this episode had some really good, I liked the lighthearted scenes at the beginning of it with the elderly couple that was in the cabin. I thought that was a really wonderful piece that we got to see with some people surviving, and just the landscapes they traveled through in this episode, absolutely breathtaking. And then getting to this town in Jackson and finally seeing Joel see his brother, and just how cathartic of a moment it was for him, yet short-lived, as then he started to have to accept the reality of what was going on, and then him coming to terms with how he really feels about Ellie, and then also having to come to terms with the fact that his little brother doesn't need him to protect him. This was just all around a very emotional episode. And then, man, they managed to tack on some very tense scenes along with a real cliffhanger at the very end of this thing. As soon as they're getting into that place and looking for these fireflies, it's like, oh, we've seen a scene like this before. And I'm just right on the edge of my seat again and worried about our characters. And it carried right through to the damn credits. Still quite worried about our characters going forward, but this was another fantastic episode, a very, very deeply emotional episode for our characters.
Yeah. Yeah. They don't take their foot off the pedal when it comes to the emotional stuff. I'm telling you, man. Melissa, what do you think about Ken?
Yeah, I think what you all have already said is, exactly right. Exactly how I'm feeling about it. When it comes to taking your foot off the gas or not, for our emotions, we're still powering through. But I think that this episode really shows like what happens if you are just going and going and going, like through trauma and through heartbreak and all these things Joel has been going through. The second he finds like a moment of rest, the second he's in the company of who he considers his family, like we see him start to fall apart. And I think that's really true to life. Anybody who has been pushing through emotions like that and then finally gotten a moment to breathe and had some breakdown type reactions, I think can really relate to that, even though we are not technically in the post-apocalypse. But I really liked having another episode here. We got the conclusion to the Kathleen story that was kind of a two-episode arc, and to start another what's seeming like at least a two-episode arc with what's happening with Joel here, I think is a really fun way to structure a season of television. So I'm really excited to talk about this episode and to see next week. I'm really anxious.
I didn't watch any clips again for next week. I just was like, no, I'll just wait. I'll see what's going to happen. But Billy, we didn't get to talk to you last week about Endure and Survive. I want to know your thoughts on that, and I want to know your thoughts on Ken.
Yeah, last week I think they did a great job of really adapting one of the kind of key storylines. I also kind of like the symbolism of the fact that the anger and the boiling over of that revenge type of storyline by that militia and by the leadership kind of is represented by the monsters rolling out and the bloater and everybody actually losing Kansas City, and how if you really hold on and live for revenge, that's what's going to end up happening to you. And kind of in an interesting contrast to this episode, like you guys have all highlighted, this gave us a chance to take our foot off the brake, breathe. And what I found really interesting is this is definitely the first episode of the series so far where they've allowed the characters and even allowed ourselves to actually think about what would it be like for them to live and not just survive. Since we've been with these characters, it has just been a locomotive train running in from event to event to event. And this is the first time where they, for a, you know, a moment at least, felt relatively safe. And what's really interesting too is it's showing that in this world, the only way that in a sense that you're safe is because no one's really safe in this world. But the only way to live is to allow yourself to be vulnerable, allow yourself to have kin, whether it's the couple in the beginning, whether it's the commune or with comrade Tommy, or even now maybe with Joel and Ellie as they kind of approach the end of the episode. So just really interesting and kind of a change of pace for the show to show. I guess you could say Bill and Frank kind of showed that as well. Like if you allow yourself to love, you can actually feel a little safe in this. So a different change of pace, but really love this episode in contrast to another great episode last week.
Yeah. Yeah, fantastic episode. I cannot wait to break this one down and talk to you guys about it. Let's jump into this one. We start off immediately with them showing us kind of like where we left off. And so we saw Henry taking his life, and then it flashes to 3 months later. I wasn't expecting us to do a time jump into 3 months later, and now we're in the winter. And at the beginning, when we're watching this man who's coming back from hunting, going back to a cabin, I assumed we were watching Joel after a rabbit hunt here. I assumed that Joel was bringing back dinner, and this is where they have been staying for a while during the winter. And then we come to find out that it's this elderly Native American man named Marlin, and I love this actor, Graham Greene. I've seen him in so many things over the years. And it was nice to see him in this role. I was not familiar with the actor that plays his wife, Florence, but my God, if she was not great in these scenes. She is just sitting there. He can kind of tell something is up. And then she darts her eyes over to her left, and Joel comes out from the cabin holding a gun and basically saying like he wants directions to head west. They'd gone to Cody to look for Tommy. Cody is overrun. It's infected. And so now they're trying to find their way to this Firefly base. And they're basically saying that if you go west and past what they're calling the River of Death, all you're going to find is death and infected. Bodies. There's just death there. You're not going to find anything but death. And what did you guys think of this whole scene? I thought it was great. I loved these two characters that we just barely got to meet.
Oh, absolutely. Their dynamic between each other was just so much fun, with the husband being gruff and practical and the wife just being like almost like somewhat spacey. Like she almost comes off like she's a little bit baked. It's like while she's sitting there, like he's like, why did you shoot him? And she's like, the gun was like way over there. Just the way that she delivered those lines was fantastic. A really fun couple. And when he said that they've been out there surviving for a long time, it just made me happy to think that these people were just like, you know what, we're going to go out there and live. And she's going, she doesn't even want to, but she's doing it anyway.
You can tell that that's been an argument over the years, that she didn't want to live out there. And now he's
waiting for someone to come over and hear her.
Well, and then on the flip side, it's like, you know, he's got to be throwing it in her face. Like, this was the right move.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. 100%. I want just the half an hour comedy spinoff of these characters where different people come through.
If it was a Disney Plus show, if this was a Disney Plus show, you'd be getting that spinoff. I promise you.
They are hilarious. I love them.
I think, I mean, arguably in an episode with great acting, she may have the line of the episode when she says, "There's Firefly people." And then she just starts giggling.
No, oh, that was great. That was great. They both start laughing. It was so good. Well, I
100% believe that. I think they also think Joel and Ellie are, you know, off their rockers.
Are you guys real? Are you like really, really real right now?
Yeah. Doesn't she call Ellie like, well, she's like, yeah, he has a little girl. He has a girl here. And, like, doesn't Marlon say something like she's a psycho kid or something?
Who's this little psycho?
Who's this little psycho? And she just comes out waving a gun. But they wanted.
And then when Joel says, you know, tell me where we are on the map, your answers better match, he has to check with his wife. Did you lie to them?
Twice.
Are you lying to me?
Yeah. Yeah, because, you know, he probably gets it at home as well.
She was lying just to be like gamey and jokey, and Joel ends up shooting him. Real funny, honey.
Just the way this whole scene unwrapped was great, because they don't feel like that much of a threat. There's a good comedic twist to the scene, but then it ends with this ominous warning.
Yeah.
That, you know, hey, beyond that river, it's all death. Nobody comes back from there. We see bodies. It's both infected and not infected. And man, when you just see them walking, they're in these beautiful wide open landscapes, but there's also plenty of places where you could still get ambushed. And going across that train bridge had me a bit on edge, knowing that they're walking into danger.
Well, I mean, Joel having this panic attack has me worried about him. And I mean, yeah. What do you think is bringing these on? Is it's got to be, as we find out, I believe, as we find out later, just like the pressure of keeping Ellie alive and not having the faith of himself to do so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. He's finally. I don't think he's admitted it to himself yet, but he really, really cares about her, and he's really worried about history repeating itself and him losing another daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And it's spinning him out so bad that when he really starts worrying about it, it's like he's having a heart attack.
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say real quickly, he seems to somewhat snap out of it in the moment. I mean, we see that these panic attacks are becoming quite regular for him throughout the episode. But when Ellie's saying, "Are you okay? Are you dying?" He's saying, "I'm okay. Are you? Because if you're dead, I'm fucked." Like, he somewhat snaps out of it, I think, because she starts panicking about what's wrong with him. So he can go back into, you know, just protector mode and kind of turn that off for a minute.
He's dealing with it all the time. I mean, the stress of this, and it's even affecting his sleep. We saw him sleeping at the camp that they had made, and he's mumbling something in his sleep. He's saying, "It's supposed to be me. It's supposed to be me." And I believe in that moment, he's talking about, you know, the death of his daughter, Sarah.
Oh, for sure.
And yeah, I mean, this is something that it's weighing on him very heavily.
It's just any moments that you could say that he affiliates with her, you know, a gun being pointed at himself, going into the town and seeing a Christmas tree, and then later imagining a final Christmas that he didn't have. It's just, and again, I think it does come to kind of the point I said at the beginning, where like, just even for now, these brief moments where they're able to kind of breathe, a traumatized brain is going to start flooding itself with those thoughts, especially now that there are no clickers, no raiders, nothing like that to even distract the brain, which were very real distractions of literal survival. But now when you don't have that imminent threat, like, what does your brain go to?
So they leave the cabin and they continue on this route to try and find Tommy. They camp out in a cave. We see Joel taping up his boot, which is something that we'd seen Tess do in a previous episode. We see Ellie. She sees the northern lights in the sky. Has that always been possible in Wyoming, or is this now something that you can only see, like, in the post-apocalyptic world with, like, because Wyoming, I mean,
yeah, it's far enough north.
It's far enough up north. Yeah, I was thinking, I was wondering if it was something that you could still see even in, like, Wyoming now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, supposedly, if there's a large enough solar flare coming off the sun, you can see it as low as, like, where I'm at in Iowa. I've yet to see it. Every time they say we're going to have it, I set my alarm and go outside, and I've yet to see it.
Oh, yeah. But
for sure, it would be south, far enough to get to Wyoming at times.
Yeah, that's something.
Probably not as much as being, like, in the Arctic Circle. You'd see it all the time.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, that's something that I'd like to see in my lifetime.
For sure, dude. It is. It's pretty crazy.
I remember when I was a kid, I was like 7 or 8, and Halley's Comet, which only comes around every 80 plus years, was coming around. And this was like in the mid to late 80s, I want to say. And I was wanting to see it in my telescope, and I couldn't see it anyway. But they showed it on the news, and it was like just this little thing in the sky. I was not blown away.
1986.
Yeah.
Basically just like a moving star.
Yeah. Yeah. It was just like a moving star, but it only comes around every 80 years. And I was like, you know.
2062, boys.
2062. I'll be dead, hopefully.
and if you're alive, your eyes ain't seeing that.
So they're sitting down by the fire, and Ellie's asking Joel, like, you know, what would you do if they're able to find a cure from her blood, and then the world goes back to normal? And Joel says that he would find an old farmhouse and raise sheep. And then he makes a joke about at least sheep do what they're told. And Ellie talks about how she'd always wanted to be an astronaut and starts talking about her favorite astronaut being Sally Ride because she loves her name. And then doesn't she open up about she opens up about her plan with Sam and her trying to use her blood on Sam to cure him. And Joel says something like, you know, that I don't think that that's how it that works. And so you got to think to yourself, though, this is the first time she's admitting that to him. And it's 3 months later. We had just seen it in the previous episode, but it took her 3 months to get to this point to tell him that.
Yeah, that's a long time to hold that secret and that hurt inside.
Yeah.
That is a really good point. That's something I think that kind of does get lost a little bit, because it is a quick kind of 3 months later and you do see the change of scenery and all. But I think, like, until you just said that, Brian, that really that part of it didn't register as much with me as a viewer. So,
yeah,
I think it's a great point.
Yeah, she held on to it for a while. I mean, I think that death really affected her. I mean, we don't know about everything that happened with Riley, and I'm sure we'll find that out, but I think Sam's death was another one that really affected her, so much so she couldn't talk about it for 3 months. I love this next part, because Joel wakes up and realizes that he fell asleep and that Ellie had been keeping guard, and Joel's upset that she didn't wake her up. And Ellie basically goes through and tells him everything that she did keeping guard and how she did it right. it's like she's learned from Joel what she needs to do. That's something I brought up in a previous episode. Like, I don't like it when these kids blow off the adults. They don't listen. They do things their own way, and their way is the right way, and the adults look like dopes. It's just like, in this version, he's been teaching her, and he thinks that, you know, she's young, she's not mature, and this is that moment where I think he learns that she has been listening to me. What I've been teaching her is valuable, and she's proving herself to me that she's mature enough to handle this. She's mature enough to handle this. And we see it even later in the episode. I'm jumping ahead, but like when he's teaching her how to, you know, shoot the rifle. And she's saying, you know, there's something wrong. She thinks there's something wrong with the gun, something wrong with the scope. And she hands it over to him, and he's able to hit the bullseye.
Hmm.
And it's like, I'm not a big fan of just handing somebody something and then the first time just being like an expert in that thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And most times there is a learning curve to learn how to do stuff like that.
Yeah.
In this scene, the way that Joel was so upset about it, I think it's because inside he's still horrified by the fact that a girl this age has to learn these skills. And at the same time that he's horrified about it, he's very upset with himself because he feels like because he's slipping, she's having to step in and do these things. And he hasn't accepted the fact that to be a good father in this world, these are the skills you have to teach your children. As horrifying as that is, if you don't teach your children a certain level of violence and handling weapons and stuff like that, they're not going to make it.
Well, think about hundreds of years ago when, you know, women would have to go down to like the creek bed to clean the clothes. They were taking guns with them. You don't know what's out there. I mean, that's just the world that they were in. And in this world, it is different, but there are dangers. You don't know, like hundreds of years ago, having to go out there, you don't know if a bear is going to walk up on you, a cougar, whatever. This is just the world that he needs to realize. It's not the way that it used to be. Kids need to have protection. Kids need to learn these skills because this is the world that we live in now.
Yeah, it's just the sad reality.
And Ellie is a fast learner. She is the definition of like a sponge, and it's great. And I agree with you, Brian. It's always the worst when you have incapable kind of younger child characters that just are constant, say, roadblocks. And while she's not perfect, she definitely learns quickly. And as we've already seen, kind of has a knack for living in this world and the kind of ruthlessness that you'll need. So, I mean, it's just really cool to, like you said, to see that like mentorship aspect. It kind of reminds me of like an anime, honestly, seeing like a mentor, young mentee, but like the young mentee is actually powerful and capable.
Yeah.
It's an interesting dynamic.
Yeah. It's very cool. We see Ellie trying to learn how to whistle. She can't do it. She wants to learn how to hunt at some point and starts talking about, you know, Joel brings it up like, well, that it's not just the hunt, it's the, you know, the dressing as well. And basically, like, you've got to skin the animal and take out all the guts and all that stuff. And she's like, why is it called dressing? It should be called undressing.
And I love that he didn't have a good answer for that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because actually, why, though?
The full term is field dressing an animal.
Okay.
It's good stuff. I learned how to do it when I was like 11 with a deer.
I feel like Joel's mansplaining not only to Melissa, but me and Billy as well.
Well,
like,
it's somewhat necessary.
If I would have launched into where you make the first cut and what you got to avoid, I'd be on your side.
No, it just reiterates to me that I'm not a real man, Joe.
I can teach you. Come on, we'll start
to
with
come
squirrels.
Up with the term field dressing, I think I could have, because I grew up in a cornfield. Like, I've seen a deer be dressed live and in color, and it was pretty horrifying.
It's gnarly, but, isn't it?
Yeah, I've never thought to ask, like, why do you call it that?
I'll stick the Newman's Own dressing, guys. That's that's the only dressing I really give a shit about. Let's see here. They come across a hydroelectric dam. I loved it when Ellie saw it and she goes, "Damn!" And he says, you're no Will Livingston, talking about the guy from the pun book. And
I didn't catch that joke. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought that was great.
One thing I want to point out also, earlier when she was trying to whistle, that's totally an Easter egg from the game. Like, she walks around trying to whistle following Joel in the game.
Oh, okay.
Oh, that's fun. I can't whistle either.
I can't do a loud whistle.
Yeah,
like, I can do like a little bird call, but that's about it.
I can't do that, you know, Phil Jackson whistle, you know, Phil Jackson, coach of the Bulls and Lakers. Like, he's got that powerful whistle. I can't do that one. I can whistle, but I just can't throw the two fingers in my mouth and, you know.
Yeah, that's like a superpower. I don't know how people do that.
Yeah. God.
I think it's interesting too about the dam and the power play. So that was like a big playable section in the game, and they don't really focus on it outside of just highlighting its existence. But it's definitely like a very like meaty part of the game.
Yeah, there's a couple things that I noticed. I watched one video about this episode, and there's a moment in the episode where there's a poster of a giraffe on the wall, and apparently in the game they come across a live giraffe at one point. So they're doing a little, like, little nods to the game in that way.
There are a lot of subtle nods, and not just kind of the outward ones that a lot of people are talking about, to actually like the second game. So I'm not going to really get into a lot of them, because I don't want to like foreshadow like any like locations and things like that, but they are definitely building out. It's very interesting to see how they're able to tell the story of the first game now, with the second game being written already, right? It wasn't written when they wrote the first game, obviously. So you don't have that kind of world additional. So it is nice and kind of cool to see it with the arc and path already written out for them, to see what they can include, which would make sense to be included.
So they're walking along, and then all of a sudden this group of armed survivors are on horseback and surround them. They tell them to drop their weapons, and then their leader, who is Maria, we don't catch her name at this time, but I knew the actor. I'm a big fan of hers, Rutina Wesley, from she played Tara on True Blood.
True blood.
I loved maybe the first three seasons, and then it just, when it started getting into fairies and stuff, I was like, this is getting silly.
But so I had read all those books, and I was into it.
Yeah. I read a whole bunch of them, Melissa.
It does change from being, that's amazing, Joe.
Got probably about like 8 or 9 of them. It's sad.
There is too many. And, like, the show goes too far, I'll admit, but still. Regina Wesley fucking rules.
Oh, she was great as Tara. I loved her.
As soon as I saw her on the thumbnail, I got excited. I was like, oh, I haven't seen her in something in so long, and I absolutely loved her. And she's playing such a similar, just, like, no-bullshit type character in this. And as soon as she started talking, I was like, oh, man, I know she can do these lines. And she killed it in this episode.
She was great. It was great seeing her again. I haven't seen her in anything probably since True Blood. I'm sure she's been in stuff. I just haven't seen her in anything. It was nice to see her in this show. They're wanting to find out if they've been infected. So the first thing that they need to do is they're sending in they've got a dog that can sniff for this, which I thought was pretty brilliant, that dogs, we saw in the first episode that dog could sense that there was something wrong with their owner. And then at the neighbor's house. And in this one, they've basically, which is wild, because in real life, there are dogs that. Have you seen the dogs that can sniff cancer, Joe?
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, dogs are incredible. And so
dogs can sniff COVID, I think.
Oh, wild.
Even already, yeah.
So yeah, they've got a dog here that's going to sniff both Joel and Ellie for infection. And the dog's ready to, the dog is trained to attack. I feel like the dog, I feel like if somebody's infected, the dog's just going to start biting down on them at that point.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, Joel passes. And what were you guys thinking? I was worried about Ellie here.
Oh, yeah. The way they filmed this, I was so worried. With the dog doing that low menacing growl, and you just see the terror on Joel's face, and all these people surrounding him leveling guns that, I mean, these people are going to kill on sight immediately if there's any indication. And so they filmed this perfectly to really, really give you anxiety.
What does it prove? I know we know that she can't, that her blood contains certain antibodies. It's a cure for the cordyceps virus, but once she gets infected, does it just not grow and spread? And so, because
her body's able to somehow, I don't know if it would be metabolize or it neutralize it or something like that. But the curious thing is that she shows up red on the Fedra electric scanner.
Yes.
Yeah.
But the dog
was like,
you know, I mean, the dog eventually was like, liked her enough to where I was like, I'm going to be cool with you and actually playful and stuff. But at first the dog was like, you're not smelling right, but you're not smelling 100% wrong either. And so, right, man, it was a scary situation.
Just shows that the dog is actually better than the scanner.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
or there's absolutely like nuance to this infection that the scanner can't tell you.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah. I mean,
I kind of read it less that maybe that it's like more localized, say, in her body, and more so the fact that it's just like the dog able to discern that. And again, this isn't the term they like using, but she's not a zombie, right? She's in control of herself. She's not already being taken over by this infection. So I think that's maybe like the discernment there. I'm not sure if they get into like the physiology and like what they're going to establish and such, but like that's how I read it at least.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah. Like the dog is like, you know, you definitely kind of smell infected, but you also smell like a regular human and you're acting fine.
Yeah.
I like that the dog's able to discern that.
So now that they've got confirmation that neither are infected, it still doesn't mean that like we can trust these people. Joel explains, you know, that he's looking for his brother. And at this point, I feel like I'm sorry, my cat. At this point, I feel like, you know, they cut away and there's a moment where he's probably, do you guys think that there's a moment off screen where he's telling him that I'm looking for my brother, Tommy? I'm not 100% sure that happens or not. Maybe he just says he's looking for his brother, because I think maybe if he would have dropped the name Tommy, Maria might have chimed in at that point.
I inferred that he had said that. I thought like, okay, I'm looking for my brother Tommy, and I know maybe she didn't reveal herself at that moment, but yeah, it would. They didn't explicitly put it as hard to tell if it was like a surprise or whatever the case is. How did you guys read that?
I read it as no matter what, they were going to be making sure that they weren't infected first, because right away afterwards, the guy's like, you bought 10 seconds. What are you doing here? And that's when she was willing to engage. As soon as he says he's looking for his brother, she probably sees a little bit of a resemblance and knows that Tommy's probably said, I wouldn't be surprised if Joel comes looking for me at some point.
See, like,
you need to let me get on the radio because he's going to show up here. I know this man.
But see, it's like one of those things where Joel, as soon as he met Marlon, did, you know, drop the name of his brother. Like, you know, have you met anybody by the name of Tommy? And he's like, does he look like you? No, I haven't. You know, so I don't know. Yeah, I guess it's not that important. I think it just made sense for the story for him to find out later that she's with Tommy. Because us as an audience are also finding out in that moment.
Yeah, I was probably just a narrative choice.
Yeah. So we find we're brought to the this gated community of Jackson, and it is full of people that, I mean, it looks like a town from like the Old West. I mean, people are working in the town. They're getting ready to celebrate Christmas. Tommy is working on a construction project outside. And then that's when Joel sees him and we get a big hug from the two. And it was a nice moment.
Oh, and that's the way that Pedro Pascal shouted Tommy in that moment. It was just so charged and there was so much relief and emotion in it. And that was a really beautiful scene. And also, man, when they go into that place and it's showing the wall around it and the level of gate that they have around it, you know, they're pretty well fortified, especially if they can just keep snipers up on those walls and keep people with fire away from those wooden logs. That was impressive.
Are they setting this up? I mean, that's got to be an expensive place to kind of make for, you know, this HBO show. I mean, I can't believe this is going to be the last we're going to see of it. Are they setting it up for a big action set piece with clickers later, do you think?
Oh, shit. I don't know. I hadn't even considered that.
Billy might know, and I don't.
It's kind of sad. I hope not.
I'm just staying quiet. It may or may not appear again. any amount of short or long duration.
It just seems like, you know, an expensive kind of set piece that they might want to use again. And it looks like it's a pretty big fort, and it could be an interesting place to see clickers attacking. I don't know. I'm curious if this is something that we might see again. Joel and Ellie go into the cafeteria to get some food. And, you know, this is the Ellie's never, she's considering like this the first real meal she's ever had in her life. She said something like, what is, she drops an F-bomb here. And
something like, I've never fucking had a real meal.
Yeah.
First, I've never had a real meal. This is like good as fuck. This is fucking good or whatever. Yeah.
Apparently, kids are not talking like this within the walls of Jackson. And
well, must be nice for them to have Christmas.
Well, yeah, because these kids that are in Jackson are growing up in a somewhat civilized pocket of this world right now.
They're growing up in a communist government.
Yeah.
That moment was so funny.
It was very funny.
Well, it's not like that. This is a literal commune.
The best part of it was Tommy realizing it.
Yes, absolutely. You could see the wheels turning in his head as he's being like, Texas. Oh, shit. Yeah. Shit, like
so funny.
Okay, so this one girl is kind of like in the distance and staring at Ellie, and Ellie looks at her and goes, "What?" I was just like, "Oh my god,
she's so aggressive."
And what drives me crazy is seeing, like, I'm flipping through on the internet and there's something. You know what? I'm not going to say it here because I don't want to spoil anything. I'll shut up. I just don't like the internet giving away certain things. Anyway,
I'm really worried about that. Just like in general, with the time heading for like season two and stuff, like how much time there's going to be, and just like how much talk people are going to basically like. If you don't want to be spoiled, you're going to have to block Last of Us as like a keyword, and that right. sucks.
Yeah. And so at this point, Ellie is just, she's still kind of, I guess, reeling from the fact that they were holding her at gunpoint, and Tommy and Maria apologize for getting off on the wrong foot with her. And they basically explain, like, you know, there's certain things that we have to do to protect this place. And Joel wants to have a talk between him and Tommy, and between family is what he says. And that's where Tommy holds the hand of Maria and says, like, you know, she is family. And Ellie just kind of does a quick turn here and says, congrats. She's all happy
it's
about
really
it now.
Funny.
And then she's like, this is another moment where she's got to like it was earlier. It was like him trying to instill some politeness and into her. And now she's saying, you know, hey, say congrats, Joel.
It was a great role reversal.
it's a fun simultaneous moment of her being like, oh, well, this makes things easier. And then Joel being like, oh, this makes things harder.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Tommy and Maria then take them on a tour of Jackson. They talk about how it was an abandoned gated community and they had found it 7 years ago, turned it into a commune. And they don't advertise their location. So they stay off the radio, which is why Tommy stopped, you know, contacting Joel on the radio. They also get their power from the dam. And so Ellie's just like, this is a real, this place really works. And yeah, it's beautiful. They have animals, they've got horses. And Ellie is introduced to a horse named Shimmer, who I found out is in the game. Is this like a big part of the game?
It's a horse in part two.
Oh, nice.
Kind of like a little Easter egg, because it's like a name from something like that. You know, it's kind of like a thing.
Okay. Tommy and Joel go together to have a drink in the bar. Tommy asks Joel, you know, how is Tess? And Joel says she's fine. And he starts to explain that he's taking Ellie to meet the Fireflies. The whole reason he's here is to get her to her family among the Fireflies. And Tommy then talks about how the Fireflies have a base in Boulder at the University of Eastern Colorado. And it's about a week away on horseback. And, you know, to expect that you're going to run into maybe some bad people, some infected. Joel wants Tommy to go with them. Tommy at this point explains that Maria's pregnant, and this is where, like, we've had all these talks of Joel talking about his brother being a joiner and joining this cause, joining the military, joining the Fireflies. Now he's joined this group. I think this one kind of like, I think this is bigger than all of them, though. Like, this is his family. And I think, like, Joel's still holding on to some anger here because of Tommy leaving him to go and make up for all the bad things that him and Joel were involved in when they were together. And we don't know everything that they did while they were together, but we can assume from the things that we've, you know, that Joel has said, the things that Tess has said, the things that Maria says in this episode, that they did some bad things and killed some people. And
yeah,
that reminds, when Tommy's around Joel, that reminds Tommy of the bad things that they did. That's something, there's some healing that really needs to take place between these two. So Tommy's trying to make up for that, and he's trying to live this new life. And I think seeing Joel, as much as he loves his brother, it is a constant reminder of the bad things that they did together. Like, these have to be bad. Like, bad.
They weren't things.
People.
They were people, and we
sure
killed them.
Yeah.
Like, that line was
yeah
a heartbreaker for me.
Just like Joel's has to now, when he gets here, has to kind of sit here and actually face his truth and his demons. Tommy has to do the same. Tommy, as you can see here, has curated a very nice life for himself, but it's also curated a nice life. And you can kind of tell from the interactions that his wife has with Ellie that he put a lot of the blame on Joel, and he obviously does blame a lot of it on Joel, but I think he's going to have to come to the understanding too that, like, he did these things as well, just like Joel says. And, like, maybe I think a lot of that could be the fear of, like, will I not be accepted in my built home if they know that I wasn't just this follower and I also was like very actively involved. I think it's a very natural fear that you don't want to lose this, basically this paradise.
Yeah, like essentially he's left this part of his life behind, but then that part of his life shows back up and it's more complicated because that part of your life is family. And with Joel, he's upset because he's seen that his little brother's gone and grown up finally. And he doesn't need his big brother to come rescue him. In fact, he's moved on so far that he's starting his own family.
Well, there's also this, I don't know, tell me if this makes any sense. It's like Joel did everything he could for his brother to keep his brother alive and keep him safe. He's even said it in the past, like half of the reason that he even traveled, he was even with the Fireflies in the first place is because he was looking out for his brother. So he does all this. He makes all these probably horrible, like he does all these awful things, but it's all to keep the one piece of his family alive. And so now it's like he's protecting Ellie and he's having to do a lot of things again. There's a lot of killing. There's a lot of things that he's doing to keep her alive. Do you think that there's part of him that he just feels like he just ruins everything and he doesn't want to be burdened, or he doesn't want to burden Ellie with this either now? He doesn't want to put her through what he's put Tommy through.
I think it's mostly he's worried about the fact that I think he's more worried about his own potential for loss and heartbreak.
Yeah. And I think it is part of that too, Brian, like you said, like he was there, like, you know, Tommy saw him lose his daughter. Tommy was there for him. They did what they had to do to survive. And like you said, Tommy is now multiple times in his life, whether it be the army, the Fireflies, now this new group, has always chosen to go find his identity and his home with strangers. And Joel's like, well, I'm right here. You know, I've always been here. And like you said, Brian, I've gone from being a builder to a basically a mercenary, but in order to help you in a lot of ways. And I do think there's that subconsciousness of kind of like, you're a little ungrateful, honestly, like good for you, bud. Like, I'm really glad you're having, you're going to have a kid and you have a wife in this at a movie theater. Like, I really thought you're going to like help me out here. Right. Like, but like when he hears that, like how great this life is, there is probably part of that like jealousy too. Like, well, shit, like now you got it all. Like, what the hell do I have? You know what I mean? So,
I did all this for you. And now you have all, you know, yeah. I don't know.
There's you go and move on and don't even let me know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Send me a message real quick so I can come be warm too, right? Like, it's that part's like, what the hell?
What's wild though is like, it's so different between Tommy and Ellie are so different when it comes to Joel, because I feel like Tommy has seen the things that Joel does and it has scared him about who he is when he's with his brother and what he's had to witness. But on the flip side, when Ellie sees Joel beat up that Fedra soldier, like she's kind of attracted to that violence. It's a different dynamic between those two.
Yeah. Well, and it's because even though Tommy was a soldier, he still grew up in a civilized world. And Ellie is such a product of the world that she's grown up in. And not just the world, but the part of it that she was raised in a Fedra school to be a soldier. You know, she's essentially a child soldier living in this world. It's a really crazy dynamic.
So. Yeah. Tommy tells Joel that just because his life stopped, it doesn't mean it has to stop for him. And Joel leaves and says, you know, we'll leave in the morning. And this is when he has another one of these panic attacks. And then sees, this was heartbreaking. He sees a woman in the crowd there in the town square, and while they're singing Christmas carols, and the woman looks about the age that Sarah would be now, and she's got the same hair, and
and she's got like a daughter of her own. He's almost seeing like, this is the path that could have been. Had the world not gone to shit, this is, I would have seen Sarah grow up. I would have been a grandfather. I would have seen her have a child. And I think in that moment, it's really reminding him of the fact that he's not making the right choice here.
Yeah. Ellie, we see Ellie. They're able to shower there. She gets a shower. She gets new clothes. Maria.
She gets a diva cup. Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's like weirdest gift ever. But Maria is like the most caring, thoughtful person, just period, post-apocalypse aside. Like, to give a young girl who's alone in the world with a middle-aged man a diva cup is an amazing gift. And then such a nice haircut. Just like, it's obviously been forever since someone has taken care of you. Let me get my scissors.
And then one of the sad parts about this world is just having to see there's a chalkboard sign. It's basically a memorial for Kevin and Sarah. And so that's just the world that we're in. It's just sad. And to see that this boy, Kevin, wasn't he only like 3 years old?
Oh, I did not do that math.
I didn't either.
I think the boy was born in 2000 and died in 2003, days.
He was only three, yeah.
Days after the pandemic started.
Oh, my God. It's just, all these people are just living in a world with just so much hurt and sadness. And it's one of the heaviest parts of the show to me is just how well they portray that side of it.
And then seeing Sarah.
Just how bleak this world would be.
Sarah, you know, born in 89, dies in 2003. Same age as Ellie. Like, wow.
Sure.
Maria, she cuts her hair. And they start talking about how she used to be an assistant district attorney. And that's when they start to talk about the memorial over the fireplace. And this is when Ellie realizes that Sarah was Joel's daughter. And Ellie says that explains some things. Maria then tells Ellie, you know, she may not really know who Joel is. And then Ellie basically says, I know that he's done some bad things. He's killed people. But she's like, Tommy did too.
And she gets it.
Yeah.
You know, she doesn't judge. She understands. And it's something different than in the game. You don't get to actually see her the moment she finds out. We just, through conversation, realize that she knows. So it was very interesting. And like you said, in one moment, it just illuminates everything for her. I mean, it just changes everything in one moment. She just understands him almost like she already understood him a lot, but now she understands everything.
Ellie's at the town is having a movie, watching a movie together. They're watching Goodbye Girl. I've never seen, it's a Richard Dreyfuss movie. I've never seen Goodbye Girl.
No, I'd never seen it before either.
Nope.
I hear it's good. I've not seen it. I love Richard Dreyfuss as well. So, anyway, Tommy finds Joel in a cobbler's workshop working on his boots. And then Tommy shows up with a brand new pair of boots for Joel, which I thought was very nice. Tommy apologizes for being rude and says basically like, you know, the path to that university you can handle it. You can make it there. This is when Joel tells Tommy everything. Maria's not there. He tells him everything, that Ellie is immune to the cordyceps. He saw her get bit. It's been months. And then he starts to talk about how Tess died and what happened in Kansas City. And he's worried about Ellie making it there. He's opening up. He's crying. Is this the first time since his daughter died that we've seen Joel cry?
Yeah.
I think so.
I've never seen him more vulnerable in this series than in those two moments. This moment here and then the moment where his daughter died in his arms. Like, and Pedro Pascal, like, give this man an Emmy for this. Like,
oh, he crushed this scene right here.
He comes off as a very strong man in every episode. Just strong and able to take on anything. And he's held it in for so long. For so long. Think about, like, when we see him again, when they do the 20-year time jump. And how he's adapted to this world, how he is around Tess, how he is around Ellie.
He's emotionally walled off.
Very much so. And I, like, it just, like, it that just stops, man. And he, the tear wells just start pouring out here. And I've never seen him so vulnerable, talking about how he's too weak to protect her. And he's dreaming about, he's having nightmares about her dying, and he's begging Tommy to take her to the Fireflies, that he's younger, he can do it. And
I think also he just wants to distance himself from Ellie. He doesn't want to open himself up to that potential for hurt again.
It's exactly right, Joe. It's like allowing yourself to love again and be vulnerable opens up the other part, the risk, the pain, the loss that comes with it, right? And he just isn't sure that he can literally handle it again.
Yeah, it's like Bill told Frank, you know, I wasn't afraid until I had you. And now Joel is feeling fear. And he hasn't felt fear, I think, in a long time because he's had it under wraps. And now he's feeling fear so intensely that when it strikes him, it feels like a heart attack.
And just, you know, like, he feels like he couldn't protect Sarah in the moment, and he doesn't want to go through that again either. Like, he doesn't want to be the cause of her dying.
Yes.
Man. Yeah, I thought that this was a powerful scene, and I'm thinking about Tommy in this moment. What is Tommy going to say? And I felt like in this moment with him just breaking down those walls and crying the way that he did to his brother, that I was like, you know, I'm glad that Tommy agreed to do it. I think that there's some healing there, just the fact that he agreed to do it. Like, we know what happens later, but just the fact that Tommy would do
this. In that moment, Tommy was willing to do it.
Yes.
He agreed to Joel's terms. I'm going to take this girl that I have no connection to, and I'm going to take her on a very dangerous ride when I have a pregnant wife at home that I can't tell the truth to about why I'm doing this.
Joel does a good job of selling it too. He's like, you know, you've always wanted to be a part of something big, you know, like something that can help this world. But, you know, even going back to joining the military and, you know, being a part of Operation Desert Storm and then joining the Fireflies later, finding out that's not all that it's cracked up to be. But then joining this community. And now he has something, now he could do something that could really change the world. So he kind of sells it to Tommy as well. Like, you know, this is personally something you've been wanting to do. But I think a lot of it did come down to the fact that his brother, you know, said, do this for me. Please do this for me, and I'll never ask anything of you again.
Yeah, and he probably hasn't seen Joel that emotional since the night that Sarah died.
Yeah. Yeah. We see Joel get back to the house. And we see Ellie in her room. She's reading a diary of the girl that had lived there before. And, you know, what teenage girls were into before, like, you know, just, I guess, boys and what did she say?
I think she says what skirt to wear.
Yeah, what shirt and what skirt to wear or something.
Yeah, what match or whatever, yeah. Yeah.
Joel realizes that she had overheard some of he and Tommy's talk when he was in the shoe repair. And Ellie basically comes out and says, you know, I'm not Sarah. Joel tells her that she doesn't understand what it's like to lose somebody. And she points out to him that everyone that she's ever cared for has either died or left her. Everybody except for Joel. And I've watched this twice, and the emotion that Bella Ramsey has in this scene, I mean, we go from Joel breaking down to now Ellie breaking down, and when she pushes him, and the way I've seen it both times, and both times I get hit emotionally. Like, I'm almost ready to fucking burst into tears from this scene. This scene hit me really hard.
Same. This was the scene that made me roll tears. I thought Pedro Pascal's monologue that he does in the previous scene was incredibly moving, but this was the one that pushed me over the edge.
Same.
And she, Bella Ramsey did a very good job with this. Like, you absolutely believed it. You hear that desperation in her voice that she's like, no, I have finally made, like, I've chosen you. Like, you don't get a choice in this. I've chosen you. You're saying that I don't know anything about loss, and you're just going to be another person in my life that goes away after I've started to care about him. And, oh, man, you totally believe it.
This is where I was expecting her to, like, snap back at him and be like, I'm just cargo, right? But she didn't.
Oh, that would have been great.
It's like the pivotal from this is almost, I mean, it is almost line for line from the source material. This was like the most memorable scene, in my opinion, from the game, as far as just like a normal conversation. And it is just like catharsis, and it's just letting it all go, like you said, and seeing what you can build after you let all of that go. And I'm glad that they just allow that scene to kind of breathe there at the end, and he walks away, and we're kind of just like left there with them, right? It's not interrupted. It's not some crazy thing that ends it. Like, it's just them getting to dwell on an honest conversation.
Joel makes the point that, you know, you're not my daughter and I'm not your father, and basically that Tommy's going to take you. And the morning comes. Ellie is already up, ready to go. Tommy, I was like half expecting that Joel was going to open the door, and it was Tommy. And takes Ellie down to the stables. And this made me smile. You see Joel there, and he's trying to steal one of the horses, and he tells Ellie that she deserves a choice of who she's going to go with. And she's just like, I'm going with you.
I love it. She just immediately throws the duffel bag at him.
Yeah. Oh, God, man. I'm telling you, for like an episode that, you know, no clickers, no nothing, you don't always need that in this. I mean, it just just these emotional moments, man.
Yeah. The human moments are what's really carrying this through.
Yeah.
Some episodes have to save on the visual effects budget.
And I loved that. Well, this town cost a fucking lot, Billy. I can tell you that much. And all the extras that they had to get into costume. Yeah, this was no cheap set piece. I was very impressed with this.
It's really cool.
It was very cool. Joel says goodbye to Tommy, and Tommy lets them know, and I thought that this was awesome, that, you know, you can always come back here to Jackson. There's a place for you here. And I loved that, because it felt like at the beginning of the episode, it was almost like Joel was feeling like, you don't want me here. Like, I'm the bad people that you want. I'm the kind of person that you want to keep out of this town, because Tommy knows his past. And here Tommy's got, you know, open arms for him and Ellie if they do decide to come back. They're making their way to Boulder, and this is where they have the they do stop, and he's teaching Ellie how to shoot with the rifle and the scope, and I love that. And I loved the moment where he's talking about his life before and what he did and how he was a contractor.
Oh, that scene was fantastic. And I loved it when at the end of it where he's like, everybody loved contractors. And, yeah. And like the way that as the scene cuts, you see his smile getting bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
To where he's like, hey, I'm going to make up some false history.
Well, I love the way that
who's going to tell her?
I love the way that
didn't like contractors.
I love the way that Ellie says the contractor. She's like, the contractor. Yeah. And then later she's like
the Batman voice.
And then and then later she's like, contractor.
No perception of what it actually was.
She cracked me up, man. Oh my God. They talk about, there's another part where they're talking about the football and the rules of football. And I really enjoyed them talking. Just their dynamic as these characters is just fantastic. The further we get into the series, it's really good.
Well, and especially this dynamic here in this moment where now they've been open with each other.
Yeah.
Those wounds have been laid bare and now they're healing, and Joel's actually opening up and telling her about his life and being more forthcoming about what the world was like. He's acting more like a dad, and she's riding on the back of the horse and, resting her head against his shoulder. And there is much more of a father-daughter bond from this moment out in this episode.
I love these characters, man. I'm telling you, I get fucking upset to think anything's going to happen to either of them throughout watching this series.
Yes.
Episode over. Let's not continue.
Yeah. There will be no episode 7 review because I'm just going to leave it here. No, I got to see what happens. I still have to see what happens with Joel, but I just don't want anything to happen to either of these characters by the time we get to, the final episode of this series, whenever that will be. They do find the university, and Joel starts talking about how he wants to change his answer from before when he was talking about, he wanted to, start a,
want to be a sheep farmer.
Sheep farmer. I cracked up when he said he wanted to be a singer. And Ellie's
this
like,
"This is why he won't sing for soulful. Us, Brian. You're already laughing."
I'm with Ellie on this one. I thought it. I love the fact that he felt comfortable enough to admit this, but I also love the fact that Ellie does exactly what I would have done here and starts to laugh.
You expect to be like, well, anyway, here's Wonderwall.
The Contractor is the name of his first album.
Oh, man. And then she's talking about how, hey, I'm going to save the world. But the one thing I want to hear you do is sing. That's the least you could do for me. And they see there had been some testing going on there. So there's these escaped monkeys that are out there on the campus, and some of them are actually within the university. So
dude, I worried about infected monkeys for a second. I was like, if we get a monkey clicker, I'm going to freak the fuck out.
I've watched too many Planet of the Apes movies. I was thinking maybe like Caesar, was going to have ape uprising here. No. They start seeing then Ellie notices a firefly symbol, so they know that they're close. The thing is, we're not seeing anyone. It's very quiet. We're not seeing anyone. And so they go inside and they find out that the fireflies and the scientists and everything have left. First off, why did they leave? They left a lot of shit there too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they sure did.
It's almost like
the
something
way that they left their monkeys is alarming to me.
Mm. Just let them be free.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There is actually like a backstory to the monkeys in the game.
Oh, nice.
basically, I mean, it's basically, it's like the scientists like freed them before they left kind of thing. So they weren't just like sitting in cages.
That's sweet.
But, like, that one is nice of them.
Yeah.
Doesn't end well for the scientist.
But it's like, why didn't you think you wanted monkeys where you were going? I have questions.
Yeah, no, there's going to be monkeys.
There's got
to
be.
We're gonna get to Salt Lake City, monkeys.
Well, the monkeys are infected.
Oh, the monkeys are infected?
Yeah, the monkeys are infected.
But
we are just hours before monkey clickers.
Oh, well, shit.
Not like monkey clickers, but just like angry monkeys.
Oh, I've seen 28 Days Later.
When they look on the map and it looks like the fireflies are relocating to Salt Lake City. They hear a noise and they look outside and there's a group of four raiders. And so Joel wants to just get the hell out of there. And, they know where they need to go now. They need to go to Salt Lake City. So Joel and Ellie, head out a back door. And get up on the horse. Joel is unhooking the horse. And then Ellie says, Joel. And then Joel, one of the raiders just comes up on him. Joel gets him in a headlock, snaps his neck. And then I even watched this. I went back and watched this. I could not see where this guy stabbed him.
Well, when he comes running up, he swings a baseball bat, misses Joel, but hits the tree. The baseball bat breaks. And so the guy's still got the broken handle in his hand. And while they're tussling, he must have stabbed Joel in the abdomen with the broken handle of that baseball bat.
Yeah.
Yep.
Did you guys like...
Oh, and also that's a total Easter egg from the game. When Joel choked that guy out and broke his neck, that's you do that over and over again in the game if you're playing leaning towards the stealth side.
The map. Brian just mentioned as well for game fans. Everyone knows that's a definite Easter egg as well.
When Joel pulls out the handle, I was like, no.
No,
like,
don't do that.
Well, yeah.
Well, the first thing I said was like, you never do that. Like,
yeah.
And all you listeners out there, if you ever find yourself in a situation where you're impaled, don't pull that out because it's holding the blood at bay.
I think I saw David
professional pull it out.
I think I saw David Schwimmer have that in a 90s The More You Know commercial. You know, dun, dun,
dun, dun. Like, I literally said it out loud. I'm like in the kitchen, like with my headphones on, watching this on my phone, and out loud I go, "Oh, don't pull that out. You gotta leave that in."
I know. I was thinking
my
the
wife
same
turns
thing.
Around and goes, "What?
G.I. Joe?"
She thought you were watching porn again.
No shit. Don't pull that out. I didn't even think of that before.
She's like, "Ah, Joe, you're watching porn again."
In the kitchen.
Cream pie porn.
In the kitchen. We have children. They eat there.
I'm the guy that just walks around with headphones on watching hardcore porn.
Cream pies watching cream.
Don't pull it out. Never pull it out.
So yeah, Joel pulls it out. They get on.
Big mistake.
Yeah.
He pulls it out. Things are gushing.
We are teens. We're teenagers. Ellie's more mature than us. I'm telling you.
I think Ellie would have loved these jokes.
Yeah, she would have.
She would have.
Especially if Joel weren't laying there dying and you were acting uncomfortable about it instead.
We're no Will Livingston, though. I will say that much. They get on the horse. They get the hell out of there. The guys are still chasing after them, but they give up. They can't keep up with the horse. Do they reach some train tracks? Is that where they stop? I can't remember.
Well, yeah, they eventually get to some train tracks. And that's where Ellie says they're not following us anymore.
Yeah.
And then... Yeah, Joel just drops and falls off the horse.
Oh, fuck. Yeah. And Ellie is basically saying, like, you know, I'm lost without you. I don't know where to go. I mean, this is her worst fear. Remember in Endure and Survive, her worst fear that she admitted to Sam was ending up in this world alone. And this is what, I mean, her worst fear is coming to a realization here. And just the fact that the show is smart enough to let us know, like, this is like her worst fear coming true. I just felt so bad for Ellie in this moment. And it feels this episode ends in a way where we just feel like everything is hopeless. It's like, oh my God, I don't know anything about the next episode. I don't want to know anything about the next episode, to be honest with you. But it just feels hopeless in this moment.
Well, not only is it her greatest fear happening, it's his greatest fear happening at the same time. He can't protect her. He's too weak to protect her. So in that moment, literally both of their biggest fears are happening.
Yeah.
And boom, cut to black.
Yeah. Damn. What an episode. My God.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Man, and for them to just have that moment, too, where they finally connect and their relationship is getting on and you think that they've gone through the hardship. And then the last 10 minutes of this episode, it just puts you right back in. No, though. You know, it was nice what happened in Jackson there, and it was nice seeing civilization again. But this is the reality of this world. These are the dangers that these characters are facing. And we're going to let you soak on that for a while because we're just going to cut to credits. In the tensest part of this episode.
So are we guessing that Salt Lake City doesn't have a QZ?
Oh, I didn't even think about that.
Well, I mean, the Fireflies are going there and it felt like...
Yeah, so it can't really be Fedra because those seem to be antagonistic.
Right.
Unless Fireflies, like, infiltrated Salt Lake City Fedra... And then, maybe they're on down.
Well, yeah, exactly. Like maybe they've come across, like maybe they through the radio, they know that, you know, like we saw what happened in Kansas City. You know, it wasn't the Fireflies, but they were overtaken. And maybe the Fireflies have overtaken Salt Lake City. So, but you got to, I don't know. You got to feel like even getting... Within Salt Lake City, there's going to be tons of infected.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a major city.
Just sit this one out.
Billy's sitting it out. Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that, Billy. I really do. But loved this episode. We've only got three left?
Only three to go.
Whew. I've seen the titles for I didn't read what they are. I see that the titles for the next two episodes are out there, and the episode 9 title has not been revealed yet.
Oh, I haven't seen the episode titles yet. I did watch the preview for next week, so I got a feeling of what sort of ground they're covering next week, and I'm very excited for it without spoiling anything about it.
Oh, this episode also ends with the episode 1 song, Never Let Me Down Again, but it's an acoustic cover of it. And I found out that the acoustic cover was done by, was it Neil Druckmann's daughter?
Not Neil Druckmann, the other.
Craig Mazin?
Craig Mazin's daughter.
Craig Mazin's daughter, yeah.
Okay, Craig Mazin's daughter, yeah. Yeah, Jessica Mazin.
I was listening to him talk about that, and... What an incredible voice that girl has.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And it's kind of symbolic, right? Because at the end of the first episode, it's an older male voice. And now it's a young female voice singing the same song, kind of saying like, OK, now like we're like Ellie is like taking charge, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So, God damn, I'm ready. I'm ready for the next episode. I'm not ready for the series to end.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. Yeah. I mean, we're really coming up in the final stretch here with just 3 episodes to go.
All right.
Yeah, I can't believe there's only so few episodes left.
Yeah. You know, what's crazy, though, is like as soon as this ends, we're going to get more Pedro Pascal March 1st with Mandalorian Season 3.
Helmet back on.
Totally different vibe of a show, but right. Also still Lone Wolf and Cub.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man. Billy, it was nice to have you back, man.
It was nice being back.
Yeah.
Great episode to come back for.
Yeah. But any final thoughts on the episode before we wrap this one?
Another great episode. This show just continues to be amazing. Absolutely worth everybody's time. And I think when 2023 is all said and done, this is going to still be up there with one of the best TV shows of the year, because for the first quarter of the year here, they are setting the bar very high.
Yeah. Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, I think HBO is realizing that maybe they don't have to rest their laurels on Game of Thrones spinoffs.
Agreed.
You gotta be thinking that they're like, man, you know, this Chernobyl guy's pretty good, and we'll end it there. Whoa, did I lose somebody?
I don't think so.
Nope.
I heard Skype noises on my end. It felt like I was in the, it did that boop, boop. I felt like I was in a submarine for a moment. I felt like I was like in Hunt for Red October. I was looking around for Sean Connery. I didn't know what was going on.
That was funny.
Boop, boop. Like weird. Whoa. Anyway. Yeah. Melissa, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Letterboxd at Mellow Yellow and co-hosting the Wild Pretty Things podcast.
What are you talking about on Wild Pretty Things right now?
We have just released our second episode, kind of finalizing our 2022 favorite movies, and we are going to be recording a review of the beloved movie musical Chicago coming up soon.
I've never watched it. I'm glad. Yeah.
we know how I feel about musicals.
yeah, exactly. Billy, where can people find you, man?
Yeah, I'm the host of the Reality Guys YouTube channel. You can find us there and on TikTok. We cover everything and anything reality television, anything from the Netflix reality shows like The Perfect Match, The Circle, The Ultimatum, Love is Blind, to the classics like Bachelor, Survivor, The Challenge, Love Island, and even some of these kind of one-off weird shows like MILF Manor, 90 Day Fiancé. So you can find us, The Reality Guys, on YouTube, TikTok, any kind of social media.
And you can find me taking an antacid here shortly. I don't think that Kung Pao chicken set well with me, guys. If you know, oh my God, it's just started creeping up on me at the end of this episode.
You're so brave.
Oh my God. No, you can find, I'm serious, man. Jesus Christ. You can find me on Pop Culture Leftovers, with Joe, where we talk about, the latest in, TV and movies. We review all the new stuff that's coming out for the week. And then we have a heavy focus on Marvel and DC with all the TV and movie news as well. And this week we're talking about, it's going to be the bare necessities, Joe. We're going to be talking about
nice
Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey, and Cocaine Bear. So yeah, we're going to be, those are just a couple teases, but yeah, join us next week for episode 7 of The Last of Us. We'll be back next week. Thanks a lot, guys.